Welcome to Routing for Success, the show where we interview today's top logistics professionals, giving them a platform to share their stories and best practices. Today, we are talking with Matt Heglin of Accounting Associates. Matt is not a FedEx contractor himself, but I invited Matt to come onto the show because he represents 450 FedEx Ground contractors in his accounting practice, and he is intimately familiar with the FedEx Ground contractor model. I've had several contractors tell me that Matt has made a positive impact in their business. In this episode, we discuss ERTC return amendments, accelerated depreciation strategies for trucks, some differences between asset sales and stock sales for anyone considering buying or selling a FedEx route business, and some ways that sellers can reduce their tax burden through use of Revenue Code 1202 and ROBS transactions. I am pleased to present to you my conversation with Matt Heglin. This episode is brought to you by AP Equipment Financing. AP Equipment Financing can bring you the best deals on step vans, panel vans, cutaways, and more, deliver them straight to your facility, and finance them with low monthly installment options. Click the link in the description to this episode or visit apfinancing.com. All right, we're here with Matt Heglin, Accounting Associates. Matt, thank you for being here.
Appreciate it, Ryan. Really appreciate you guys having me on. I watched a few of the other ones, and you guys do some good stuff.
So give us a quick background. Before we talk about anything related to FedEx, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from, and how did you get into accounting?
So it's kind of been in my family ever since I've known. My grandfather started our accounting firm in the 70s. It was just a local tax prep place, mainly tax season, you know, but we tried to find other avenues to have some work in the off season and you know, to kind of stay busy all year. And so we started going to terminals in the mid-90s, and just word of mouth grew, and talking with FedEx contractors on the phone and meeting them in person just really took off. And it's kind of a market that wasn't really tapped yet then. And so we just would, you know, stay at hotels and go to terminals and just meet guys, and it worked out really well.
What turned you on to accounting? And I have a little story here. When I was going to junior college, Matt, I knew that I wanted to do something business oriented. I thought I probably wanted to be a business major. And there was one semester where I took economics, math, and accounting. And out of the three of those, accounting was my least favorite. I think I did okay. I probably got like a B or something in my intro to financial accounting class. But I came away from that thinking, you know, maybe this isn't for me, and I, you know, maybe I'll do more something like economics. But what turned you on to accounting? How'd you get into it?
You know, I had a high school teacher I really liked. She kind of was energetic, and she kind of a lot, you know, as far as teachers wise, she was one of my favorites, so that helped a lot. I did 2 years with her, and then I was her like student helper for a year. It's kind of always been in my blood.
Hey, Matt, how did you first learn about the FedEx Ground contractor business?
You know, it was a local terminal. We kind of had a client there. He was always behind every year, always paying in a couple years behind. So we decided to put him in an S-Corp. That kind of stops the collection process with the government. They kind of see that you're trying to set up an entity. We helped him a lot. The terminal manager really appreciated it, and he actually moved to a terminal in Rock Island, Illinois, invited us over there. And there we met a bunch of different terminal managers, and this was before FedEx kind of required people to be incorporated. So we just word of mouth. There's a gentleman named Ward Strang who was a CEO of FedEx Ground for a few years there, and he let us go to all the terminals for about 10 years. And so every summer we'd pile in the RV and go to different terminals all over the country and try to, you know, get the guys donuts or something to kind of get them over to our corner and talk to them about taxes and getting incorporated. And in FedEx, you know, the word spreads pretty fast. So terminal managers move or different guys are chatting about things and just really word of mouth and getting out there and trying to, you know, get these guys to understand what they're dealing with, what they can deduct, a good structure to save taxes. So just really kind of getting out there and getting to terminals is really where we started to work with all the contractors.
How many FedEx ground contractors or clients do you work with today that are FedEx ground contractors?
You know, I thought you might ask this question. So I actually looked, and I usually say about 500, but I looked last year at all the e-file tax corporate returns I did, and there was 486 of them. So we e-filed 486 corporate returns. I would say 30 of those, maybe just local people. So easily over 450 contractors we're working with all over the country.
That's great. And is there anything in particular that you really like about working with FedEx ground contractors? Anything that comes to mind?
I feel like contractors, for the most part, are salt of the earth people. They have to deal with a lot of employees issues. They're dealing with vendors. They're dealing with the government, the terminal managers, FedEx. So in most cases, they like to laugh. They like to have fun. If I'm in a room full of contractors, I feel really at home. You know, we can talk about anything. There's actually really maybe a couple floating around, but there's really no contractors that I don't like and can talk to about anything, and just easygoing people for the most part, you know, really, really down to earth people.
So Matt, when you're working with a FedEx ground contractor in the capacity with accounting associates, what does that actually mean? Like, are you just filing tax returns for people, or is there more to it than that?
With us, you know, I try to say, I call it a one-stop shop to a degree, where we know finance people like AP, we know some work comp people, we know payroll people. So I try to help them I want to look at their expenses. I want to look at their margins. And so a lot of time what we're doing is I'm talking to them every month or every quarter, going over their fuel, their repairs, their wages, making sure that we're hitting our benchmarks. If we're hitting our benchmarks, we're going to be profitable. If we're not hitting our benchmarks, we got to try to, you know, find out what's going on. Why is that happening? Do we have to condense a route? Do we have to look for a new work comp quote? You know, what's really going on? Is the truck, you know, just nickel and diming them now because it's 10 years old? Do we need to get a new truck? So a lot of what I do anymore is bookkeeping to a degree, but looking at their margins, kind of analyzing their numbers, and then tax prep, corporate tax prep, personal tax prep. You know, I tell my guys, most accountants kind of know what other accountants know to a degree, but with FedEx, there's internal audits, there's good standing reviews, there's just a lot going on compared to kind of a normal business. So we stay up on all the new tax laws, you know, corporate things that we can do. And really, I want to make sure we're being profitable and talk to them about FedEx, any questions they may have, and then doing the taxes for sure, doing corporate personal taxes.
Yeah, when you had talked about how many FedEx contractors you have, I mean, you'd said you did 486 tax returns last year, tax filings, mm-hmm. and you think that 450 of them were FedEx ground contractors. So that's like the vast majority of your business. So you're really a specialist in this industry. What would you say, Matt, to all the people out there who are like, you know, using H&R Block or TurboTax?
If you just got a W-2, go for it. Try to do your taxes once. It doesn't hurt, you know, on some of those platforms because it is free. But no, if you got a business or, you know, anything really other than just wages, it's to me, they're not your partner. You only see them once a year. They leave half the time. You don't get the same person the next year. They don't really understand. They do the schooling kind of early on in the fall, and then they're just there to do personal taxes more than anything. If you don't have a partner or someone that can at least understand what you're talking about and, you know, we'll call you back. You know, that's a big thing with accountants. It's hard to get people to even call them back anymore. We need a partnership. We need someone that understands business, that understands depreciation and some of the credits that are out there for people. And if you're just going down the block to H&R Block, they're going to charge you a lot also. And it's probably not going to be the best tax return that you could get. I truly believe that.
Now, Matt, you obviously get to see what's really going on with these businesses on the financial level. Have you noticed any trends over the past few years?
You know, COVID was one of the craziest years ever. I mean, people were getting PPP loans. There was a lot of SBA things going on. I had guys tell me they thought they knew their route, and then COVID came and they're delivering houses that they've never seen. And so COVID was just an explosion of e-commerce, of trucking. I'd say it's kind of settled back a little bit more. You know, people are getting back out there the past couple years. As far as trends, I mean, every year we need to kind of look at our margins. We got to, you know, where can we cut? Can we get a fuel card? Can we do things to try to get some points or you know, get a little back on all the purchases we have, the buying power that we have as a contractor. I think negotiations are going a little better with FedEx contractors. I think that's kind of a trend I'm seeing, that the actual contracts are actually, you know, we're coming up in numbers from past couple years. But it's cyclical. Every, you know, there's going to probably be a big tax change after this year. So who knows what we're going to be able to do. Every President Trump's tax cuts run out in 24. And so it all reverts back to 2018. And so they're going to have to pass a big bill this year to, you know, see what's going to happen on the tax code. You just never know. It can change so much, so quick.
So what would be your thoughts on how contractors are doing financially as a whole?
You know, I would say a majority of them are doing pretty good. It's hard work. You know, these guys work a lot. They're working 7 days a week. You know, if we can negotiate a good contract and we can hit our margins, we're going to be okay. We really are. Where I see some of the issues popping up now are if you got a variable SBA note, you know, where you got a big loan for some routes and some territory, and if that interest rate is a variable rate, your $10,000 payment is now 15 or 16 or 20. And so some of the guys that I see struggling are some of the guys that have the bigger SBA loan out there where, you know, maybe they just had an engine failure. It could be anything. And making that payment, it's one thing when it was $5,000 a month, but now with it being 10 or 12, with the rates going up, it's really those are the guys that I'm seeing that are hurting probably the most.
Yeah. And let's actually dig into some best practices now, if that's okay. You had mentioned just a minute ago, you mentioned SBA loans. Are there any mistakes or blind spots that you've noticed come up often with FedEx contractors? And I don't know if SBA loans is one of them.
You know, it is. I see a lot of, I deal with a lot of route brokers and different people all over the country buying and selling these routes. And, you know, everyone I see is perfect. 15% profit, 20% margins. It looks great on paper. Well, you know, I have a saying, it's an old saying, but trust but verify. Ronald Reagan back in the day, trust but verify. So I like to see the hard copies. Let's see the real 1099. Let's see the payroll summary. Let's see the manager's wages. Let's see what you're paying yourself. Are the owners able to take draws? So when I start digging into some of those financials, they won't have the loan payments on there. You know, how, yeah, you're showing $150,000 in profit, but we're paying $10,000 a month in a loan that isn't showing up. So, you know, everybody can see the fuel and the repairs and the wages, but it is some of those outlier things, startup costs, you know, with license fees and sales tax, buying a fleet is a lot. Some states have an exemption for that and some states don't, but to me, you know, brokers are great. There's some good ones and bad ones, but that's where I try to come in and really kind of, I tell my clients, I'll be the bad guy. I'll ask the tough questions. You know, they can yell at me and you know, we'll be able to see if it's profitable. I just, more than anything, I try to hit their blind spots and kind of point out things to them that aren't really showing up on the P&Ls all the time.
So here at AP, you know, we talk a lot about Section 179 as well. Typically, as we get closer to the end of the year, how does Section 179 work?
Good question. So, you know, the first year you buy an asset, if it's over 6,000 pounds, we're able to expense it. Curb weight, 6,000 pounds, we can write off the purchase price, up to the purchase price. So it's a great deduction, taxes. It lowers the tax down by the purchase price. Federal government, we can write off up to about $2 million worth of equipment. States vary. Some states only let you do $25,000. Some states match the federal limit. So it's a great tax saver. Where I come in, though, is if we're writing off a truck every year and you're not paying that off early, or you know, we're waiting the 5 or 6 year loan payments to pay that off. Well, year 4 and 5, that thing was written off a long time ago. And the cash flow, the tax return's not really matching up because you're still paying this payment and we're showing more profit than you actually have. I try to just, if we got a big loan, I want them to know that, yes, I can write this off and we can lower your taxes. But I'd like you to try to pay that thing off in 3 years. You know, let's make a double payment, or if it gets down to the end, we can try to pay it off a little sooner, more for cash flow items. Another thing I like to do is I want to get the actual purchase agreement, like AP. You guys have good purchase agreements. The fees are built, you know, we can see the fees, everything. And sometimes there's excise tax, there's sales tax, there's different things on those purchase agreements that I'd like to see to make sure that we're getting the total price too, that we're able to, you know, sometimes I can expense the sales tax and different things instead of just depreciating it. We might be able to write that off without having to try to do the 179. So, great tax saver, you know, in this business to a degree, if you're not buying trucks, you're paying more taxes. And so what do you want to do? Do you want to have assets, real assets that we can sell, that we can trade in, and we can expense those? Or do you want to have more profit and pay the government more tax money? You know, so it's people say, I want to get away from the payments, but it's really hard to do that without basically giving it to the government to a degree.
Now, also, FedEx contractors, you know, they do traditionally purchase, you know, all their trucks. But it does seem like, you know, they're slowly becoming more interest in leasing. What are some things a contractor might want to consider when they're choosing whether to purchase or lease their trucks?
So leases are good. I like leases too. But if it's a true lease, we can only write off the payment every month. So we can't accelerate the purchase price. We can't, you just get what you get. If you're paying $1,000 a month, you get for a full year, you get the $12,000 deduction. Even though it may be a $60,000, $70,000 truck, we only get the lease payment every year. We can't depreciate it and expense it. So there's companies out there that will capitalize. It's called a capitalized lease. And if there's a buyout at the end, bigger, you know, they have these, some of these places have dollar buyouts where that's more of a lease. But if there's a buyout at the end, I can capitalize it and I can depreciate it. So I think that's kind of where some of these lease companies are. They're trying to kind of let you pick your own price at the end, kind of let you pick what your payment is. But you may pay less, but at the end you have a higher buyout for the truck. Do you want to buy it out, or do you just want to get a new one and try to keep making those payments? I also say with lease agreements, there should be a maintenance agreement. If we're going to pay for a lease, which is usually going to cost a little more than a loan, through AP or whoever, they should probably rotate the tires for free, oil changes, some preventive maintenance in there too, to try to entice these guys to do the lease. I feel like you pay a little more on a lease, but if you're getting some of the extra perks here and there on with the maintenance, maybe that's worth it. the capitalized leases are nice too. I like those as a tax person, being able to have the option. Do we want to just take the lease payment, or do we want to depreciate it, accelerate it, and try to expense it sooner?
Yeah, and you mentioned, Matt, you know, some interesting factors that might swing someone to lease instead of purchase. And, you know, and for example, you know, does it matter if a contractor has a tax loss being carried forward? And I'm just kind of wondering what your thoughts are on that, and if there's any other factors that you might want to share that might swing somebody to a lease instead of purchase as well.
So the government with S corps and C corps, they're really they're looking at losses. They're looking at basis. You have to take a loss anymore. You really have to prove basis. Well, what's basis? You know, that's your own capital that you've pumped in. There's loan basis, where if you have loans out there, you can use that as part of your basis to take losses. Every situation's different. And maybe we have a guy that's got high wages and this is an investment for him, and he wants to prove that loss to offset some of his wages. Maybe we have more of a contractor that this is his full-time job. He doesn't have anything else going on. And in some of those cases, you know, I like to save the depreciation, because we can't prove basis. He's not really losing any money anymore, but maybe we'll bring it down or at all, or he never did, but maybe we'll bring it down to a zero and save some of the depreciation going forward for him. So it's all kind of who we're dealing with. What type of client are we dealing with here? Is it more of a cash flow thing? Is it more of a full-time job? So I try to kind of talk to the clients and see, you know, what's going on with them a lot more than just automatically trying to write things off to the max. I want to, if a guy's selling, you know, I'll save the depreciation. If I know he's going to sell the next year, well, why would we take all this write-off just to pay it back the next year if we end up selling the territory and the trucks? So it's kind of a case by case. It really is.
Let's talk more about selling FedEx businesses. You know, I was talking to a mutual contact of ours, Matt, Steve Ramsdell, who was on episode number 5 of the podcast.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking about what are some of the things that make the FedEx Ground business attractive compared to many of the other things that you could do. You know, it gets compared to the Amazon DSP model a lot. You know, Amazon DSP model, FedEx Ground ISP model. One of the big differences is that in FedEx Ground, a lot of people get into the business where they pay a high price to acquire the rights to an area, and then they grow it over the period of a few years, and hopefully you're able to expand the business and increase the profitability so that you can build up equity value and hopefully make a successful exit, right? Maybe you buy in for $500,000. You grow it, you make some cash flow for a few years, and then you sell it, hopefully for a number that's much bigger than what
Sure.
you bought it for.
Sure.
So that's a really key piece to this entire thing, is actually selling the business. Tell us a little bit about, well, let's talk about, I guess, doing an asset versus a stock sale. That's always a conversation piece that comes up, is
Sure.
when you're selling your business, should you do an asset sale? Should you do a stock sale? What are the pros and cons of each on both sides of the transaction?
Yeah. Good question. We'll start with asset sales. Let's start with an asset sale. So with an asset sale, generally that person sets up their own corporation. We value the trucks and we value the route, and the seller has to show, you know, which portion of the gain is on the route and the trucks, and then the buyer has to kind of match that. So we have to kind of be cyclical there. Asset sales, basically, we can redepreciate all the assets. So we can, if we're buying $1 million worth of trucks and the route's $500,000, whatever the numbers may be, the seller would show the sale for those assets, and then the new purchaser would get to redepreciate their purchase price. So, in most cases, I kind of like an asset sale, because a stock sale, you are buying the stock in the company, and those assets are already sitting in that company. So it's really like buying a stock on the NASDAQ or whatever, wherever we're doing it. So you have basis. That $1 million goes into on your balance sheet as additional paid in capital, and it sits there until you sell it. So we don't get to depreciate the assets again. We have to just put that number on the balance sheet. And then if we do sell in a few years or whenever that may be, that comes off the sale price. Just like kind of like when you buy stocks, publicly traded stocks. So and with stock sales, it's a little quicker to get through with FedEx because the contract is already there. The payroll accounts are already set up. You can get a stock sale done as long as the terminal manager's on board and everybody's on board within a month, usually with FedEx. So it's quicker. It's a lot faster for people. But sometimes when you're buying a company, they might have a penalty floating out there, or they might have a return that didn't get filed, or just you're buying that company. So you're buying the liabilities with it too. There's a couple forms we have them fill out to send to the IRS to make sure there's nothing floating around if we're going to do a stock sale that's going to hurt the buyer. But I like to re-depreciate things. I'm a tax guy, so I want to, you know, depreciate and expense items. I will say this is where it gets funky. There's a form you can file, 8883. It's under code 351 or 361, where you can actually sell the stock, but if we fill out this form and the buyer fills out the form and the seller, you can depreciate the equipment in a stock sale too. So I tell my clients, if in accounting or in the tax world, usually there's a form or an election or something we can file to almost do just about anything we want, to a degree. But you know, stock sales to me are a little more of a quicker thing to get done. Asset sales are a little harder to get through at a FedEx. You got to do a little more legwork, but in the end, I think it kind of is nice to be able to expense some of those items instead of having to wait so long.
Yeah. And you had just mentioned it very briefly, but it's something I've heard talked about a lot, which is the risk factor. So if you're on the side of the transaction where you are buying a business, right, becoming a contractor, or maybe you're already a contractor, but you're buying the routes to a new business. Mm-hmm. If you do a stock purchase that, you know, it's Joe's Delivery Company. Well, hey, I'm just going to buy the stock. And now I own Joe's Delivery Company and Joe is riding off into the sunset. It's my company now.
Yep.
And then a month goes by and all of a sudden you get a letter from a lawyer saying, hey, someone is suing Joe's Delivery Service because a driver three yes. months ago ran over their dog in the front yes. driveway, and they've yep. got it on video and it's got your company name on the side of the truck. Well, as the new owner of Joe's Delivery Service, that's your problem now, right? I mean, so that's the risk that you were alluding to earlier, right?
It really is. I'm dealing with quite a few that a couple of them want to sell their stock right now, but they want to get the ERTC credit. And I said, well, you know, you better put it in the stock purchase agreement or something that if you really want to do this, that if those funds come through, that they go back to the previous owner instead of the new owner. So you're exactly right. You're buying the problems. You're buying the good and the bad when you buy the stock in a company. You really are.
Yeah. So as a buyer, I would probably prefer to do an asset sale, but as a seller, there was something else that you had told me about, and I don't even remember the name of it, but there was some interesting tax strategy on the seller side where if you do a stock sale that you can actually save yourself a pretty good chunk of change. Do you remember what I'm talking about, Matt?
You can, yes. So if it's through an S corp, it's a long-term capital gain, so we get kind of a flat tax. We get a capital gains rate of about 15%. If it's an asset sale, the truck part of the deal, the asset part of the deal, can raise your profit, so it can put you into other tax brackets. So, I like a stock as a seller. I like a stock sale. You're exactly right because we get the lower rate, and it's a flat tax. It doesn't put us in any other tax brackets. And actually, if you're in the lowest tax bracket, your wages are, let's say you sell out early in the year and you don't really work that year, and your wages are fairly low to a degree, we get a 0% capital gains rate on some of that money when we can keep you in the lowest tax bracket too. So I like that. C corps have an issue where if you've actively participated in this corporation for 10 years, there's a couple other rules to it, but you can basically get out of the gain on everything with the C-Corp. So you gotta be in the corporation for a while, but there's some tricks to that too, you know, where if you're actively participating and you've been having that, you had this corporation for a while and it's a C-Corp, there's some way we can get away from the gain on that too. So it is nice. It is really nice.
That's interesting. Okay, but that's for a C-Corp specifically. What percentage of FedEx contractors would you say are C-Corps? I mean, most of them are S-Corps.
Most of them are S. We're seeing more and more with, there's a thing called a ROBS transaction where you can borrow from your 401k and you don't pay any taxes on it, and you can put that money into a business and start a business. And I'm seeing a lot more of those with FedEx, but you have to have a C-Corp with that. C-Corps are tough because you're not allowed to take profit out of a C-Corp. Everything has to be wages. And if you do try to take profit, you get taxed at what's called a dividend rate, 28% dividend rate. So if you're not really trying to take profit out, or you're just trying to reinvest and get bigger and grow, maybe the C-Corp's the way to go. But if you're trying to take profit and save on some of that, in an S-Corp, you still have to take a reasonable wage. You still have to pay yourself a paycheck, but you are allowed to take a draw too. And C-Corps to me are, if that's our strategy where we're just reinvesting, and again, maybe this is a gentleman that, or a lady that has a full-time job where she's making plenty of money doing her IT work, or a doctor or a dentist, and this is just more of an investment, and they're taking a little bit of wage out of there, but they're just growing the thing and growing it. And like you said, maybe we do a carve out where you sell a portion of your route because you grew so much in the last 5 years, and you know, you're getting so big that your FedEx might let you sell off a portion of that too. And that would be my opinion more on the C-Corp, where we're trying to reinvest, and it's not, we're not really trying to take cash out of it as a distribution.
Makes sense. Matt, we're coming up on our time. Most of the people who pay attention to this show are FedEx Ground contractors. So while you have this platform, is there anything else that you want to talk about?
You know, there's a couple things going around. There's a thing called BOI. It's a new rule this year where the contractors have to register their corporation. They have to, basically the government wants to know who owns all the entities in the country. And so new corps have to do that within 75 days. Existing corps have a year to do this. And you have to upload your driver's license. I'm getting a lot of questions about that. It's not that big a deal, but if you don't do it and you know, you get an audit or something, the government can penalize you pretty good on it. So BOI, not a big deal, but FinCEN.gov, FinCEN.gov, you can go on there and you can do it all within about 15 or 20 minutes. Another thing I'm running into this year is going to be the ERTC returns. Everybody needs to amend their returns for the credit that they were getting. I feel like after this year, there might be some audits coming out on those returns if you don't amend and pay the taxes back. Some people think that it's tax-free. It's really not. Some states, it's not. But the feds are taxing the ERTC credit. So anybody listening that hasn't amended their returns, this is the year to do it. You know, I just appreciate you guys doing this. I know we've tried to do this a couple times and didn't work out, and it worked out this time. But like you said, if you're going to H&R Block, stop. All right, find just some guy down the street that has his own place, or just talk to people, talk to contractors. Who do they use? You know, do they like who their person is? No, I think we talked a lot of good stuff here, and appreciate you guys doing this, and it's fun.
For people who want to reach you, Matt, how can people get a hold of you?
So Accounting Associates is the name of my business. We're in Des Moines, Iowa. They can call me. I got a pretty easy number here, 515-283-1040. My grandfather's thought of that. 30 years ago, 1040. They can email me. They can get a hold of you. They can do whatever. They'll find me. I'm on Facebook. I'm on a lot of the FedEx Ground group pages. Accounting Associates, IA.com is my webpage. Just instant message me. You'll find me, red hair, big redhead, you know, easy to find. I'll respond and we'll get rolling.
Matt, thank you for coming onto the show. We appreciate you.
Love it. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks, Ryan.
Routing for Success is brought to you by AP Equipment Financing. In today's competitive market, it is essential to acquire the right trucks at a fair price and finance them in a way that makes sense for your business. Leveraging their extensive network of truck and van suppliers, the experts at AP Equipment Financing will help you locate the best deals on step vans, cutaways, panel vans, and more. Deliver them straight to your facility and finance them with low monthly installment options. Click the link in the description or visit apfinancing.com for more information. Routing for Success is an independent production of AP Equipment Financing and is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by FedEx Corporation, FedEx Ground, Amazon, or any other logistics company discussed herein. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Routing for Success.